5609, and the meeting ID is 917-757-6542. A link to instructions, including for listening over the web and how to submit written comments, will be available through WBAI's main webpage. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access this meeting? No, but why not?
Why not, indeed. You are tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Streaming around the world at WBAI.org, 10 p.m. on a Monday evening. You know what that means? Time for Mike Sargent and Night Shift.
The ice is going to break.
How does it feel?
It feels like times have changed.
To be present, to be here, it is always appropriate to be here, contemplate. If you ever happen to be someplace and you contemplate, I'm not here, where are you? So in this moment, be here. Be here, wherever here happens to be. In this day and time, we have gathered together to contemplate, to dialogue this that is called...
Night shift again.
I'll be damn late.
Now, where are my people? 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 Where are my people?
We'll be right back.
talking about it, and I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about this. I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light. That's all I remember.
Suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
This is Tom Central. Channel open for executive order AUC-3423.
Listen to this, boys.
Night shift again.
I'll be damn late.
Tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Night Shift, and the reason you're hearing this song, this really bizarre and obscure song called No More Lies, Girl, is because you've been jiving too long. No, because that is the actual theme of the show. We're going to talk about lying. We're going to talk about why we lie. We're going to talk about how we change from lying, from either lying ourselves or experiencing lies, and we're clearly living in a time filled with lies. We call it misinformation, and we've all watched how the media has had to come up with all kinds of different ways of saying lying. Like when they cover Trump, they come up with all kinds of things. Misquoted or misfacts or misrepresentation, or, you know, there's all these different ways in which we've seen new ways to describe lying. So lying is part of being human. It's a part of who we are. It's a part of our culture. It's what storytelling is. It's what we do every day. We lie to ourselves to some extent. We try to be honest, hopefully. But why do we ever lie? When is it a good time to lie? What's a good reason to lie? So, there is a psychology to lying. To jiving all the time. Or living under the jive times that we're living in now. And that's what we're going to talk about here on Night Shift. The psychology of lying. Now, to do the show, I couldn't do it without two people who know all about jiving. First, it took a pandemic to get her every week. Ms. Lord, are you there?
I am here, sir.
I appreciate you being here. And
Are you lying?
No, I'm telling you the truth. And Mr. Keith Brown, master of lies. Keith Brown, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. So my first question before we get into the topic of lying is what did you think of that song? My first question before we get into the topic. And you got to turn down your thing now. What? Keith Brown.
Yes, I am.
Okay, all right. I know you're here, but now you can turn down the MixLR. So I'll ask you.
It was so loud I couldn't.
Okay, you couldn't hear. Okay, no worries. So my question to both of you is, what did you think of that song, No More Lies, Girl? What, like, did...
that,
I want to bring back the slang jiving. You know, I just want to be able to say that. You jiving. Because it just sounds so 70s and cool.
Oh, no, that's the exact reason why I despise it.
Come on.
I'm not a fan of the 70s. No,
come on, these lyrics.
You can miss me by that decade.
Come on.
No, the lyrics, I mean, clearly, this brother was hurt.
Listen.
Hurt to the core. I imagine him sitting at his kitchen table, bourbon in one hand, pen in the other, tear stains on page as he's writing, because he has been done wrong.
Well, I'll, for those who miss the lyrics, I will read them to you here. No more lies, girl. Lay some truth on me, girl. You've been jiving much too long. Just take your mask away. Halloween season is gone. No more lies, girl. Lay some truth on me, girl. You've been jiving much too long. Because I trusted you, my life has turned out all wrong. All I wanted to do was make you happy. Tried so hard to be good to you. No more lies, girl. So there it is. I mean, they don't write them like that anymore.
No, they don't. And, you know, if you understand subtext, I will go out on a limb and say that was not the first draft.
Okay, now, can I tell you where that song is from? Okay, believe it or not, just for those who want to know, like, where on earth did he find this? That, first of all, that song was written, music by Lalo Schifrin, and it is from a Dirty Harry soundtrack.
Oh.
Okay, yes, it's a Dirty Harry soundtrack song. That's something you would never think, but yes, it's from the score to Dirty Harry. So there it is. No more lies, wow. Girl. Yeah, exactly.
So was it actually sung by that guy who was in the scene where he said, "I got snow.
No, no, you fool.
Same guy.
No, that you're a fool. And only someone who knows Dirty Harry would even understand that obscure reference, just so you know. Because Leanne doesn't know what you're doing. Are they coming to get you, Keith?
I've been a bad, bad boy.
I see. All right, so I want to jump a little bit into this here, but I'm going to start with a story that I think will kind of open the door to exactly what it is that we're doing here. And of course, I'd like both your takes on this. I will start with you, Leanne, but I'll just read the headline first. White woman spent years pretending to be a Native American professor before staging her death.
Say what now?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right. So, Keith, any thoughts? Had you heard about this one?
I have not. This is new on me.
This is, yeah, exactly. Okay. A white neuroscientist. Okay, I'm going to say that again. A white neuroscientist has been revealed to have spent years pretending to be an indigenous professor on social media. The hoax only coming to light after she killed off her creation via the coronavirus. Okay?
Wow.
I'm just setting you up there, okay? Can't make stuff like this up. Multiple news outlets reported the strange case of Beth Ann McLaughlin, a professor who previously worked for Vanderbilt University and who had an influential role in the organization Me Too STEM. Okay, although she was dogged by claims of bullying and racism. But scientists on Twitter and laypeople were shocked this week when it was alleged that McLaughlin had spent years posing as a queer indigenous scientist who worked at an Arizona State University. Okay, I mean, yeah. I can go on, but is your mind slightly blown at any point in here? Thoughts there, Leanne?
I'm really trying to wrap both mm-hmm. hemispheres around this story.
Okay, I'll continue.
No. I can't. I don't need more facts. I'm still trying to process exactly. the facts that I have. So there's a person who's a white neuroscientist. That's one identity. And then, but she on the internet is posing as a queer indigenous professor who teaches at the University of Arizona. Am I getting that correct? Well, okay, so now not just posing as that person, but actually, I mean, they couldn't have possibly had a real job. Okay, so it's a complete digital life, even involved in the movement, so the STEM online movement. And then... Okay, so that's where, yeah, it's that's where I'm trying to suss out what's real, what's digital, what's fake. Okay, go ahead. I'm gonna go pour myself a bourbon. You go ahead. You keep talking.
Yeah, there's a lifelike science fiction element to this. You know, this idea of creating an avatar of yourself online. And this idea, like, anybody can be anybody. I mean, we do that in different variations anyway. You know, we don't necessarily show our inner lives and what we do every single day, and we modify it. And she just went to the extreme.
Yeah. I mean, this is like epic intellectual catfishing. I feel like a slacker. I'm sitting in here just managing my own online life and identity. Just be me, and I'm tired, you know, between Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, you know, just the YouTube, you know, just trying to, you know, plot along in social media universe. And here this chick is making it happen for two. Like, wow. And she had events.
Well, you know, when you were first reading the story, the first thing that came to my mind was Rachel Dolezal. You know, remember her?
Oh, yes, Rachel Dolezal. And, she's
the original OG because she did it in person. I mean, this is a woman that would go to a college today and teach courses in African-American history herself. And she was a little bit in that, and in turn that reminded me of people who pass, you know, people who, you know, are of a certain, you know, racial, you know, if you're African American and you look light skinned and you're white and you could pass, and you know, there are probably most of our families, there's somebody like that. You know, actually there's a novel right now that's very popular, which is about something like that. Two sisters, and one's dark, and one's passing. So it's a fascination. There's a movie, Imitation of Life. This is like a tech version of that in my mind, where you can just go ahead and just pass and say, the problem with it is that because we have certain, you know, administrative technical things in place, you're actually taking, you know, something away from somebody else, you know, because they're in that position. I mean, there's not just so many Native American women of that position, and she's actually maybe taking advantage of that and not having that, you know, not really being that person. So usually when you hear about these things, they benefited from in some way. It's not like they're just doing it because they just want to pretend to be this. It's also because they actually, you know, it helps their career or they make money or something like that. So it always seems negative. I wonder if there's a positive version of this impersonation online. Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, in the case of Dozel, I mean, she actually was teaching African American history to black people. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Dude, and she went to Howard.
I know.
Like, I mean, this is not. I mean, if you want to say she true to the game, like, I mean, 4 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's not just on a random Tuesday going, "Oh, I feel like I have a tan." This chick invested in her worldview.
She probably knows more about black people than most black people.
She did. She was the head of the NAACP.
Sometimes it is a straight up benefit. I mean, she made a career out of it. Yeah. I mean, she made money from it. She actually made actual. I know it's not everybody.
I don't think she did this for the money.
I'm not saying that, but I think that was, I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying that she did benefit from it, which is probably where the anger came from. It's like that book, Black Like Me. I'm talking about Dozel right now. I'm talking about Dozel. It's like that book, Black Like Me. You know, I forget the author, but you know, the whole story is about how this guy supposedly took 6 months, I don't know what the heck he did. He said he took some kind of pills and he became black. And then he was black for 6 months and he said, "I can't do it anymore." And it was, you know, "I can't take it." Yeah, yeah. We all took it.
But, yeah, I missed that incarnation of the Matrix. Is that the next step up for Neo?
Exactly. And he did not benefit. He didn't. All he did was say, he went back and it's supposedly a true story, which a lot of people actually say it was not a true story. But he went back and he said, "It was a terrible experience and I wish I hadn't done it." I mean, I know what it's like to be black because I was black for 6 months, which isn't really telling you how. But I guess my point is that her version of that, I'm getting there. Her version of it is that it was something she did that did not make her give it up in 6 months. She actually went and stayed with it, like Leon was saying, and she ended up teaching, and she ended up making it, became part of her life. It became, you know, mixed with her actual, you know, she, like you said, she identified. It wasn't just an experiment like in the book. It became a thing for her. And then when she got found out, which I don't even know how she got found out, you know, then she got a horrible, you know, yeah. And the another thing is, like, I was talking to someone the other day, and we were talking about race and culture and prejudice. A gay friend of mine, and he was just telling me, he said, you know, we were talking about, you know, all the stuff he was going through. He goes, and I just happened to just casually say, "Yeah, well, the thing is about, you know, he's Jewish and gay." And I said, "You know, the thing is that, you know, if you want to turn it off and just suddenly say you're not gay or suddenly say you're, you know, you're not Jewish, you know, you could probably go through life very easily and nobody would know." And he's actually one of those that, you know, it's not obviously, it's not stereotypically anything. And I said, "I don't have that choice." You know, when I walk down the street, people know who you are. They've decided, they make their own decisions about who you are. They have no idea who you are. You could be the You know, you could be a United States representative or something else.
I did want to clarify something that I said earlier about Rachel. She was head of the NAACP of the Spokane, Washington branch, not the big national shebang. And there's actually a documentary about her in her story on Netflix.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
I watched it and I don't think I got any clarity around why she did this. I mean, it was interesting, but I'm like, mm-hmm. But girl, why? Like, I still couldn't get to it. You know, because I guess I'm just sitting here going, we don't get a lot of volunteers to our team. You know, you're drafted in and you're just here. But what I did learn is that she can do some hair. She's a good hairdresser, believe it or not.
I mean, I think she had to get up every morning and like, well, how am I going to make my hair look what?
Slight technical difficulty there for a second, but you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. This is Night Shift. We're on Mondays from 10 p.m. till midnight, and we're talking about lying. We've been talking a little bit about people who have created a hoax, and we've touched upon something that I wanted to expand upon just a little bit. Keith, you said something a little bit earlier that I wanted to touch upon. You were mentioning how we live in an age where, you know, we are all used to tweaking our lives. You know, we may not be like Rachel Dolezal, where we're pretending to be completely something else, but, you know, people have their profile pic. Their profile is an avatar or a digitally enhanced picture. Whether you're on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, let's say at one time you try and pick the best photo you could of yourself, but now we live in an age where you can Facetune or you can have an avatar or you can completely suggest that you have a life that you don't. And that's what people do. People don't have a life that is necessarily true, but they like to live out loud. You know, you got to make sure you get that right shot of whatever it is that you're eating or you made or whatever. You know, so everything has the ability to be enhanced. You can saturate the colors. You can adjust the contrast. You can vignette the background. You can do all kinds of things with our images, but we also do the same thing with our public image, with our digital image. The biggest irony in life is like science fiction to me of the time we live in is that during a time where we all need to be wearing a mask is the time where the mask on America has been lifted. So, that being said, to finish this story, it says here, as the media began clamoring for answers, McLaughlin finally admitted that the account had been fake. She said this to the New York Times. This is last Tuesday. I take full responsibility for my involvement. And I love this use of words here. I take full responsibility for my involvement in creating the @sciencing_by Twitter account, read the statement delivered by her lawyer. My actions are inexcusable. I apologize without reservation to all the people I have hurt. After she did this, a lot of people talked about how, in reality, she was a bully. So, You're both writers. I'd say this is a complex character, wouldn't you?
Indeed. I feel like this is a script you would write or a chapter or whatever. You turn it in and your editor goes, this isn't realistic.
Exactly.
Who would do this?
Exactly.
It's too much.
Exactly.
And now I want to know, is involvement, is that this month's version of entanglement? Is that...
That's a very good question.
Which is my favorite word right now, still. if you don't recall, based on Jada Pinkett's admission of her entanglement with a young man that was not her husband.
Mm.
Entanglement.
That's really, isn't that the name of a new Pixar film?
It should be. It should be. I can't say it without a smirk. Right.
Like, well, I think that should be a new, like, you know, they have relationship status. You know, you have, you know, single, married, entangled.
Entangled. I like it. I like it. But even using the word involvement, she's still putting a buffer in between her and her behavior and its effects. She's not, that's not taking account or responsibility. Involvement. Like somebody roped her in.
We drink a little bit. We drink a little bit.
going to read an article from something called Nature Neuroscience, which is essentially a very much a science. It's part of Nature, which is a science publication. It's very dry. Unless you're completely into science or you are a scientist, you probably wouldn't read this. But in the section called Nature Neuroscience, there's an article published on the 24th of October, 2016. It's called The Brain Adapts to Dishonesty. The authors are Neil Garrett, Stephanie Lazzaro, Dan Arelli, and Tally Chereau. And I'm just going to read the abstract. It says, dishonesty is an integral part of our social world, influencing domains ranging from finance and politics to personal relationships. Anecdotally, digressions from a moral code are often described as a series of small breaches that grow over time. Here we provide empirical evidence for a gradual escalation of self-serving dishonesty and reveal a neural mechanism supporting it. Behaviorally, we show that the extent to which participants engage in self-serving dishonesty, this is what Keith was talking about before, where like you straight up benefit, increases with repetition. Using functional MRI, we show that signal reduction in the amygdala is sensitive to the history of dishonest behavior consistent with adaptation. Critically, the extent of reduced amygdala sensitivity to dishonesty on a present decision relative to the previous one predicts the magnitude of escalation of self-serving dishonesty on the next decision. The findings uncover a biological mechanism that supports a slippery slope. What begins as small acts of dishonesty can escalate into larger transgressions. Now, I think the subtext to everything I could possibly say about politics today is in there, but I'll throw it to you first, Leanne. Any thoughts on that abstract?
I feel like I need you to do that again, but slower.
I can.
But essentially, if I'm understanding this, the more you lie, the better you get at it, the more comfortable you are with it.
Basically.
Am I?
Yes. And the bigger the lies get.
And I would think there's also a little bit of a payoff there, because if you tell a lie, you get away with it.
Well, you see,
look at that. And then they get away with the bigger ones. Why wouldn't you keep doing it?
Now, you see,
that thrill is there.
I 100% agree with you. As a matter of fact, I'll go so far as to say my take on it, on lying and this whole phenomenon, it's like cheating. It's like gambling. Cheating and gambling are essentially the same thing. And I think lying, because you're lying to yourself. I could win. Okay. So cheating and lying is, if you get away with it, like you said, the thrill is, well, hey, I got away with it. And then you go on to get away with it again.
Right. And then you feel golden.
You get hooked. See, this is where I need to go to that song. I'm hooked on a... All right, go to that suck, but hooked on a feeling. That's basically what I think happens. Mr. Brown, any thoughts there?
I think there's probably a ton of truth to that. I actually just finished reading a book. I like to read crime books sometimes, and it's called Missing Beauty. And the reason I read it was because it was about this case that happened when I was living in Boston some years ago, about this professor from Tufts who, kind of a homely guy, overweight, slub, but also quite brilliant professor, Sells or something. And anyway, he had this relationship with a prostitute, a beautiful young woman, and he ended up being obsessed with her. And he would do anything to be with her, and he would, use funds that he got for his research at Tufts University to use to go on weekends with her. He was destroying his marriage. He was destroying his career. He just could not stop doing it. And then I guess it got to the point where he used everything he had and all the money he had, and then he murdered her. So the point of telling the story is that...
Yeah, what the hell is the point of that?
Courtroom is he lied for years trying to cover this stuff up. He somehow felt that because he was this educated, smart guy, that they'll never, he could outsmart the police, and he would say, oh, I never really knew her. And they finally realized, then he finally had to admit he knew her. And then he, and then after he admitted he knew her, then he had to admit that he had this relationship with her. And then he had to admit that he took the money from his university, millions of dollars, in order to maintain this relationship with her. And it's just like, it was lie on lie on lie. And he just peeled, I mean, and he would just keep going on and on, and it almost got away with it. And then eventually they just got through it. And there's a point in the book where you're thinking, you know, why, how could he just keep lying? I mean, he's caught now. Everybody knows the situation, you know, and he's still lying about it. Sorry about that. And he just keeps going. He just keeps going. And it's like he could not even think to, like, finally just own up. So they had to finally get him and just make it where he was in a corner and he could not lie anymore. And they, all his lies just were proven wrong. And I was thinking, at some point, you think he would just want to just finally just owned up to it, but he just never did. And I just feel like he got to the point where he just couldn't stop. He just said, you know, maybe somehow if I just keep doing it, I'll get through this and I won't have to go to jail. But he eventually did get caught up.
And this is a crime book based on a real thing that happened?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that, yes, that,
it's
that,
called
that.
Missing Beauty. It's the Bill Douglas case. It happened in Boston in the 1990s. He murdered this woman named Robin Benedict.
Mm. I do kind of remember this case when it was in the mm-hmm. media. Mm-hmm. I remember that story. And I remember, you know, other similar stories, you know, that they're, you know, we're talking about lying to yourself. We're talking about... you know, like I said, you know, we have all kinds of, or maybe I didn't say it in this version of the show, but we live in a time where the media has had to invent all kinds of different ways of describing lying that the president does, like, you know, yes, and mistruths and the amount of times that he has not, you know, and then this new phrase came into being, alternate facts. And the thing about alternate facts, which touches upon something else here, because I do want to get deeper into lying before we talk about all the effects of lying, but it's a different reality. You know, you literally can create your own reality. You can create your own reality by what you keep telling yourself. You know, we've talked on the show quite a bit about, you know, narratives. You know, there are cultural narratives that we're part of. There are family narratives that we're part of. But we create our own narratives about ourselves. And when we lie to ourselves, which we all do to some extent, you know, do I look fat in this? Whatever it is, try and get somebody else to lie for you. So those things all contribute to a reality that you'd prefer. And so the night shift question is, and did you all get your night shift agenda?
Yes.
Yes. The night shift question is if we... All right, who's bumping their mic? Who was that?
Okay. Sorry.
It's all right, you know? Be still, woman. Okay, if we...
I'm sorry, it'd be so much easier when I'm paid to do this.
Okay. if we regularly bathe in a pool of comforting untruths, how can we want to embrace the truth if it's not as comforting? So that's the night shift question I'm going to ask you first, Leanne. Like when
what?
Well, the question is when it's so much more, you know, on the show last week, I asked the question, like, there are people who are in denial about, you know, the pandemic. They're in denial about all of it. And, you know, us over here who are the mask wearers, who are the ones practicing social distance, who see all the hypocrisy that's going on. Does part of you envy those who can be in such denial that, like, there's no pandemic, there's no plague, there's no danger?
Sometimes, yes. I mean, if I'm understanding the question, though, it's if the lie feels good, why would you?
Right. Hey, well, how do you pivot to, like, if it's, you know, you're surrounded by lies. You could believe all this stuff in your life about your life or reality. But if reality is so much less pleasant, why would you want to face it?
That's all of human life for all time. Life is hard. And if you can find a way to find some peace and some joy and avoid it, I think most people do. You know, you're not going to build that muscle to deal with reality as it is if you have the resources to build a better bubble. So those people that went to their second home or their summer home during the pandemic, you know, oh, I'm not going to stay in the city. I'm going to leave. I'm going to go elsewhere where the coronavirus isn't there. I'll be fine. You know, again, it's you get who wouldn't escape given the opportunity to go?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It does. That's why I'm voting for her this fall in 2020.
I don't know how you get back to that, especially again if your bubble is well constructed. Why would you leave it? But there's no incentive to embrace reality. There has to be some sort of intervening event where your bubble gets burst. You know, it's kind of like the transition from childhood to adulthood, traditionally. Mm. You know, although we can have extended childhoods for a very long time, you know, or, you know, again, some, and it doesn't always have to be tragic, but something where you get woken up or shaken up, you go, oh, this is real. Oh, this is something I have to deal with, you know, and sometimes I think, people are afraid to face reality for some things because they're afraid they won't have the skill to deal with it. You know, that their metal will be tested and the metal will fail. And so another incentive to embrace the lie in the bubble.
Makes sense. I heartily concur.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And Mike, I also think that, you know, even separate from being online, I think everybody is always creating a persona. You know, you go to a party, you know, and say you want to go there because you want to do something with your art, like maybe if you're a filmmaker and you want to meet other filmmakers who may be able to help you. Then you go to a party and just with your regular buddies, you have a different persona. You know, we're always doing different personas. I think the important thing is whether or not you're lying in that situation. And I do think that it could be dishonest about how you really see yourself, but you actually become a character. I know at my job in advertising, I have to like sometimes do these promotions. I have to do these, you know, presentations to sell, you know, something that we're doing in advertising, design or something. And I will just not be me. I mean, I'm just coming off as this character. And in some ways, it bothers me because after I get done in it and I walk away and I think, yes, you know, I'm not this extroverted idiot that just came up there and tried to sell them into, you know, using the work that we did. You know, it's dishonest, and I don't know if I'd go so far as to call it a lie, because I'm not saying anything is untrue, but I am doing a dishonest version of myself in order to get somewhere and to achieve something.
Well, I think, you know, there clearly we all have a face that we want to represent us. We have a persona, the way we'd like to be perceived, you know, hopefully the way we are perceived, you know, is in line with that, but we definitely have a way we'd like to be perceived. Whether or not we're in touch with how we are perceived, that's always, you know, in question. So I do agree with you. But
do you think of it as a lie or being dishonest when you do that?
Well, you know, again, here's the thing. Being on radio, okay, and I'm sure Leanne could relate to this, you know. Two things I'll talk about, being in sales and being on the radio. You know, when I went to sales, I'm no salesman. I'm an artist. Why would I want to be in sales? But I ended up getting roped into being sales. But the reason I rejected so much or was, you know, really like, oh, I'm nobody's salesperson, was because my perception of what a salesperson is that somebody that's going to lie to you, somebody that's trying to get over on you, mm-hmm. somebody that's how people perceive sales.
Okay, used car salesman.
Right, used car salesman, that cliche. But the reality is, a good salesman, you never forget a good salesman, their job mm-hmm. is to help you find what you need, to identify your needs and help you get them. A good sale, when you encounter a good salesperson, you'll go back to that person for anything. You'll recommend people to that person because they took care of you. So I came to learn, you know, I was very good at selling, because I was a they called me, I was a natural salesperson. But because I was not a hard sell, I was able to sell without you realizing that you're being sold, because I was just being myself. Now, I'll pair that with...
A little like being a pimp.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, yeah, this one here, it's a bargain. No, but I'll pair that with, and again, I think that Leanne can come into this, is being on the radio, you know, and being on TV. You know, I remember having the experience when I was on TV for the first time. You know, these people felt like I would be perfect for TV. And before I even got my show, okay, because, you know, again, anybody that knows me knows that, like, okay, I never watched TV. And I didn't watch TV for a very long time. And then the idea that not only am I on TV and I have my own TV show was just part of the irony of my life. But the people know me, and if I'm excited about something, I'm animated or whatever, or maybe some people think I'm charming. But I remember doing one of my first spots and then leaving, talking to the receptionist and being excited about something, and she stops me. She says, that's the Mike Sargent I want to see on TV. And then a subsequent conversation with one of the hosts on the show, again, veteran TV person, was like, look, you know, you got to be all this energy. You know, it should be, you know, you got to be, you know, you could jump on the desk. And my perception was like, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to be, you know, I don't want to be false. I don't want to be phony on the air. But it's not really being phony. Being on the radio, being on TV is more amplified than being on the radio, but it's just an extension of who you are. So ideally, you know, you're going to put your best foot forward. You know, there's the honeymoon period of any relationship. You meet a guy, you meet a girl, whether you're friends, you know. Friendship, the stakes are lower. So if you hook up, you hook up. In romance, you know, you're not going to let them know right away that you have ashy knees. You know, they have to ease them into that. So I say all that.
Some lotion.
You start using lotion when you never do. Right, exactly. So I'm just saying all those things kind of tie into, to me, what it takes. And again, I want your thoughts on this, because I've known comedians to tell me that people, like, you know, they meet them and it's like, oh, tell me a joke. You know, it's sort of like they expect
you. Yeah, why aren't you funny every
single time? Yeah, right. They expect you to be on. So I want to know what your thoughts are on persona and performing versus who you really are. And you know, is it a lie who you are on stage, or is it just an extension of you?
Or a character.
Right. Well, and it could be all of those things. I will go back and say that, yes, you are charming.
Well,
so we can.
Why? Thank you, my dear.
Well, you know, in case there, you did express that in the form of a question. So let me put your mind at ease.
Thank you.
You know, in terms of the advice that you were given, I find that fascinating. I feel like America, or maybe it's not just America, but this is my reference point. They like animated clowns.
Oh, for sure. Listen, you can only name one weather person. And the only reason you can name that one weather person is because he was an outrageous clown.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, for those of us, it's a harder climb for those of us who are a bit more measured and reserved. That doesn't ring the bell. That doesn't make the ratings shoot up, you know, or whatever
Gallagher.
It is. Right. Exactly. Exactly. But in terms of, and just speaking as a performer, and I can't speak for all of us because, you know, there are differences, you know, who you are on stage is a version of you. You know, even if you're doing a character, you know, I think Keith said it very well. You know, who you are at work, who you are at a work party is different than when you're hanging with your girls or with your boys. You know, and I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, you get to choose what aspects of you share, you know, and I think that's very different from lying. Mm. You know, now if I'm lying while I'm doing that, that's different. You know, one of my favorite shows on TV. I don't watch it as much anymore. It's called American Greed.
Oh, and, I love that show. Are you kidding me?
Isn't it so good?
This is huge.
It's all the same story. It's the same story. Oh, it's like watching Law and Order. It's the same story. It's how did this charismatic person steal money from everybody they knew? Friends, family, business associates. It's Bernie Madoff every week.
Yep. It's like everybody's shocked because they're like going, that guy was a nice guy. I didn't know he was taking all our money.
And you would think by now they would be, he's a nice guy. What's wrong with him? You would think that would be what tipped you off. You know, but people walk around with this swagger, this wealth, this image, and everybody goes, oh, I want some of that. How do I get in on that? Never really questioning, you know, what's girding that? What's underneath that? Where's the real substance here? Not questioning, well, how is the market's only giving you 2%, but this guy's promising me 10. What? That should have tipped you off. Mm-hmm. You cannot get something for nothing. These are the same people that don't want you to get your little $600, you know, unemployment check, or think you're not working hard enough. If you're working hard enough, you'd be successful, but they want something for nothing on their return. You know, and it feeds on itself. You know, if they can get one or two people who are well respected, oh well, so and so's investing. Oh well, so and so is in the company, and it just grows until it blows up in their faces. People lost their life savings, which I don't have any glee about that. I actually feel bad when people are taken.
Well, Madoff is a perfect example of that.
Perfect example.
There was there was actually a film made with Robert De Niro playing Madoff. It was called Kingdom of Lies. And it was because he got his family members, he got Spielberg, he got all these people to just think that he was going to make them money. They never thought for one second that it was a ridiculous return. And then whenever it blew up, everyone's all shocked and saying, oh, he seemed like a guy knew what he was doing. And you're like, all that guy ever did was lie. I mean, his own kid ended up killing himself because he even lied to his own children, and they ended up murdering him. Who worked for him?
Well, that comes back to what I read earlier, where, you know, the more you lie, the easier it gets to lie, the more it becomes. Now, so let me break down something here for you. This is an article from Life Science called Why We Lie. And this is from back in 2006, and I don't think humans have changed too much. The article is written by Robin Lloyd. And Robin says, we all lie all the time. It causes problems, to say the least. So why do we do it? It boils down to the shifting sands of the self and trying to get to look good both to ourselves and others. Now, this touches upon what Keith was saying. And it says it's tied in with self-esteem, says the University of Massachusetts psychologist Robert Feldman. We find that as soon as people feel that their self-esteem is threatened, they immediately begin to lie at higher levels. Now, again, I don't have to point out where we see this every day. Not all lies are harmful. In fact, sometimes lying is the best approach for protecting privacy and ourselves and others from malice, some researchers say. Some deceptions, such as boasting and lies in the name of tact and politeness, can be classified as less serious. But bald-faced lies, whether they involve leaving out the truth or putting in something false, are harmful as they corrode trust and intimacy, the glue of society. Now, we're going to be referring to that glue in a bit, because I got to say, that's some crazy glue we're dealing with right now. Many animals engage in deception or deliberately misleading each other, but only humans are wired to deceive both themselves and others, researchers say. People are so engaged in managing how others perceive them that they are often unable to separate truth from fiction in their own minds. For instance, in one experiment, Feldman put two strangers in a room together. They were videotaped while they conversed. Later, independently, each was asked to view the tape and identify anything that they had said that was not entirely accurate. Rather than defining what counts as a lie and avoid the moral tone of the word lie, Feldman's experimenter simply asked the subject after the fact to identify anything they had said in the video that was not entirely accurate. Each subject said, oh, I was entirely accurate. Bond watched themselves on video. They were genuinely surprised to discover they had said something inaccurate. The lies ranged from pretending to like someone they actually disliked to falsely claiming to be the star of a rock band. Now, that's, wow. That's like you just met somebody, you're being videoed. Yeah, I'm in a rock band. Like, okay, you clearly, this is going. Now, it says.
Yes, I am the head of YouTube.
Exactly. Yes, I'm
heard Sydney, of Bono. That's me.
That's right. That's like in 6 Degrees of Separation. Yeah, I'm Sidney Poitier's illegitimate son. Okay, so here we go. The study was published in the Journal of Basic and Applied Psychology, found that 60% of people had lied at least once during the 10-minute conversation. Now, for you to talk to somebody in 10 minutes and say that you're the leader of a rock band, that's pretty good, I gotta say. Like, you're like, obviously, one pretty person good. Was attracted. They were attracted to the other, that's what I would say. It says here, the study says most people lie reflexively, Feldman said. They don't think about it as part of their normal social discourse. But it is, as research showed, we're not trying so much to impress other people, but to maintain a view of ourselves that is consistent with the way they would like us to be. We want to be agreeable, to make social situations smoother or easier, to avoid insulting others through disagreement or discord. Now, let me just pause to say there, I know some people who pride themselves on being a-holes. That's just, you know, my experience. I don't think everybody wants to see themselves as agreeable, but, you know, that's just a sidebar. Men lie no more than women, but they tend to lie to make themselves look better, while women are more likely to lie to make the other person feel better.
Oh, that's interesting.
What are your thoughts on
agree.
That?
I completely
of course you do,
agree.
Because you're a woman. You only because you're a woman.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm lying.
So, yeah, sorry. It said extroverts tend to lie more than introverts. Now, coming into the other thing Keith was talking about, this is a section called Workplace Lies. Other research has delved into the prevarication in the workplace. That's a word like I need to look up. Okay. Self-esteem.
Prevarication just means lying.
Yeah, it's what I was being facetious.
Oh,
prevarication
okay,
in the workplace. Self-esteem and the threats to our sense of self are also drivers when it comes to lying to coworkers rather than strangers, says Jennifer Argo of the University of Alberta. A recent study said she co-authored showed that people are even more willing to lie to coworkers than they are to strangers. We want to look good, and we want to, we're in the company of others, especially with people we care about, and we want to protect our self-worth. The experiment involved reading a scenario to a subject, telling them they had paid more than a coworker for the same new car. When the coworker in the scenario mentioned they had paid $200 or $2,000 more in different versions of the experiment, the subject was asked to report how they would respond. Argo found her subjects were more willing to lie when the price difference was small and when they were talking to a coworker than a stranger. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think does that make a lot of sense to both of you?
It does make sense, especially when you consider a resume is Latin for lies. So you got the job by lying. Why wouldn't you just keep lying?
Yep.
Just keep on keeping on. Well,
just keep on keeping on. You know, it's funny. I used to have a joke and I don't do it anymore because it wasn't well received. The fact that you knew if you want to know if a man loves you or not, if he lies to you, he loves you. It means he's taking the time to think about your feelings, realizing what's going to happen. He's going to lie to you. When a man starts telling you the truth, your relationship's over, because now he doesn't even think enough of you to lie to you.
Damn.
I know, right? It's kind of deep.
That's dark.
Put on your cool shoes there. Yeah, that's one. Right. There's one with the women clapping, the men are frowning. So yeah, that's interesting.
Well, even some women were like, hmm? Like it was a bridge too far.
I'm trying to hit it.
Yeah, but
I still think it's an interesting concept.
People yell out, "We just got back together," you know. So yeah,
right. But I mean, does go to what you just said, you know, or a couple of sentences back about the impetus for why people lie and the reasons why women will lie. they'll lie to make someone else feel good, you know, or to actually come up with a reason. If I don't care nothing about you, why am I going to come up with a reason for you?
And why am I going to care how you feel?
Also, like in a relationship, I mean, if you have a girlfriend and she goes against this whack hairdo, and she's like, "What you think?" And then you're going to look at it and you're thinking in your mind, like, that is the ugliest. You're going to say, "Oh, it's beautiful. You know, I love it." You know, I mean, so there's good lies and bad lies, right?
Like, well, there's also the "I love you." However you wear your hair, however it makes you feel good.
And then, okay, I got to bring him in here because he's a master of this. But there's the Byron Saunders version. Byron will be like, "Well, I think it frames your face in a certain way."
Wow.
Okay. Byron,
listen, Byron is the master of you know, he's you know, he's like a Mac Daddy kind of. Byron, are you there?
I am here.
Byron, now I was just talking about, we were talking about lying. That's the theme of the show. Have you been listening on
no,
I guess you haven't been listening.
But I've read the
You read it. Okay. So then you know where we're at. So here's the thing. Keith was saying that if your wife or girlfriend gets a jacked up hairstyle and they come home and they say, "Do I look good?" Now, what would you say?
Does it look good?
And it don't. It don't. She looked like, if she dyed it red, she looked like a rooster, you know, but what you gonna say?
For your life, you would best be very diplomatic and say, "You know, that's really different. I wasn't expecting that color. I have to stand back and look at this for a minute. But you know..."
See? You know, let honey, me stand back. Tell you. Let me. I gotta... Hold on now. Let me
get a look at you, girl. Do a spin around.
Because is this something that you really wanted to do? Because I think if it was, you really have achieved it.
There's also, can I add on, is there also the diplomatic, "Well, baby, how do you feel about it?"
Right. Cause you, you can play ping pong with this one for a while. But I think that the truth would always come back to, cause at the end, she was doing it for your approval. And so you have to kind of be ready for
that's
that.
What you tell yourself. You tell yourself that. She's like, "Yeah, okay, I thought, you know, I like red. Okay, thank you." So, yeah, all right, we could go with that, Byron. I like that. It's all about perspective. So we've been talking here about lying and why we lie, and we've been talking about the psychology of lying and how our brain changes when we lie, and how the more we lie, not only the easier does it get to lie, but the less you feel any guilt about lying. Because it's, you know, my metaphor about such things, about what I would call emotional habits, okay, you know, is it's sort of like the first time, it's like water going down in the dirt. The first time water travels down in the dirt, it's got to find a path to get to where you got to go. The second time, that next set of water will go that path. By the third time, now that path is, you know, by the fourth, fifth time, it's just a quick zoom right there to where that's got to go, because the path has been set up and cleared. So that path to lying in your brain is biologically supported by you doing that. So that was an abstract, and that's my interpretation of that abstract. So my question to you, Byron, and if reality is unpleasant, but the lie is pleasant, did you see what the Night Shift question was? I read it back to you, Byron? Okay. I'll read it back to you. The Night Shift question is, if we regularly bathe in a pool of comforting untruths, how can we want to embrace the truth if it's not as comforting?
All right. Truth that is crushed to earth shall always rise again. You can't compromise truth. There's no such thing as a little truth or maybe...
All right. Hold on, Byron. Is that you? Do you have TV in the background? Do you have TV in the background?
Yeah, hold on just a second.
Can't you turn that off there, babe? You're doing a radio show, Byron.
Okay. As I was pontificating.
Please. Dr. Pontificitis.
Right, exactly. the truth that is crushed to earth shall rise again. It's an inaccuracy to think that two wrongs will make a right, because you're perverting what truth is. There's a purity to truth. And that's what I was referring to, that truth crushed to earth shall rise again, because there's this, as my father used to tell me, he says there's three sides to the story: your side, the other person's side, and the truth. Now, when they merge to combine each side to compromise what their truths may be to each other, that's one facet of the truth, but it will still be pure as one singular truth. And that's where we get confused, because of so much of what the world is living in now is virtual reality, which is not the truth. And it's,
I'd say alternate reality.
The alternate reality as well as virtual world. You know, I mean, people don't know when they can turn the PlayStation off and then realize it's not real, because so much of their time is spent in a virtual world of make-believe, which is not the truth. It's make-believe. The words themselves imply it is not the truth. So you get stuck in that plane. And yes, we have had weapons of mass destruction, truths and untruths. We've had other elements of the politicization of what might constitute a half a lie or a little lie or a bigger lie. Well, hey, it's still a lie is a lie is a lie. So now we've got a person in charge who's supposed to be the number one man in the world, who, by the Washington Post's own count, has engaged in the last 3.5 years in over 20,000 lies. So you see.
Yeah, but what I was saying before, Byron, is they don't call them lies. They say they have all these different ways of describing a lie. Right. Yes.
Yes, it's
untruth.
It's an untruth. It's
misinformation, yes, untruth.
It's pandering. Come on, guys. It's like the reality of the truth is that, and the basic line of the truth is that you try to pervert the truth and you still can't, penetrate its pureness. And that's the part of which we are stuck in right now, because we don't want to believe the truth. I love the piece from with Tom Cruise that says, you know, you can't handle the truth. And it's the fact is they cannot handle the truth of a pandemic that is kicking our butts. Now, how many 250,000 people in South Dakota for a biker's rally? How many ignorant people do you think exist in that place at one particular time? And they're going to be carriers. It only takes one person. Just one. Byron. So what part of the truth do they not understand? You see, because they have really bought into drinking that Kool-Aid. And they are gone. They're gone past that. Yes, sir.
Doctor. Okay. And ladies and gentlemen, that was Dr. Pontificatus, also known as Byron Saunders. Byron, since you said it, I'm going to play it, but you should turn on your MixLR just so you can hear it. But you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. I'm Mike Sargent. I'm here with Leanne Lord. Leanne, are you there?
I'm still here, sir.
Did you say hello to Byron?
No, because you've been talking, and I wasn't going to interrupt. So, hello, Byron.
Hello, Leanne. And I love the picture with you and your mother and father at your Broadway shows. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, thank you. Nice. Thank you. Yeah, that was a good day.
And you know what else would I perceived from the picture, which was really stood out, is that you all were the only three appropriately dressed for a Broadway show.
Yes.
I looked around and said, wait a minute. Is this staged? Are y'all part of the show or what?
I know. No, that has always irritated me, that we have sort of declined in our standards. Casual Fridays has ruined everything. But no, my parents and I dressed for theater or for dinner or for special occasions. And yes, someone's like, oh my gosh, your dad's wearing a suit. I'm like, we were going to the theater.
Right, exactly.
The tickets cost enough.
That's right.
So I'm with you.
Yes, and we had orchestra seat tickets to the Book of Mormon.
Damn.
So
Damn.
We're not going to show up like we go into the movies on a Saturday afternoon.
Shoot. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, no, thank you. Mike, I wanted to mention... Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. And if you're on an agenda, I will...
No, it's okay. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
That I've grown to realize that, you know, when there's a disparity between my expectations and reality, the bigger that gap is, the harder it is for me, the more unhappy I am. And so when I can align reality or align my expectations with the reality of the situation, not so painful. This feels similar. You know, you, if you're lying, if you're choosing to believe the lie, if you're bathing in, to use that statement, in the lies and not accepting the truth, somewhere in there, you know that's not the case. And you're laying a subtle foundation for illness, both physical and mental. Because in order to maintain those lies, it's going to cost you.
Mm-hmm.
It would cost you much less to just deal with the reality. But the longer you invest in maintaining the fantasy, the sicker you are going to get. And maybe that's why we got folks flipping out on camera, you know, right. Because they can't rein it in.
They're being confronted with something they want to. Now, you brought up a really interesting point here, because Keith mentioned that he reads books. I read books too. And there's a book.
Oh, y'all them uppity Negroes.
That's right. I read books too, Keith. And say hello to your former roommate there, Byron.
Hello, Keith.
Hello. Hello, Your Highness.
Your Majesty.
It's Lord Byron.
Listen, Keith, you constantly continue to amaze me. Keith is a brilliant artist, y'all. I'm just telling y'all, your work is incredible. Your sketchbook, my brother, if you don't put that on the market for a table talk, let me tell you, you can make big money with your stuff. It's just that good. Anyway, Thank you. Yes. Send me the check.
Keith, great artist, terrible person.
He was a good roommate. He was a former good roommate, you know. Mike and Keith, stupid is knowing the truth, seeing the truth, but still believing the lies.
There it is. And you're selling this on a t-shirt on Etsy, aren't you?
Oh, it's ready to go. Let's go.
There's a book called The Gift of Fear.
Okay. I love that book.
Oh, great, great book. But the author of the book, The Gift of Fear, Gavin DeBecker, talks about how the subtitle is The Survival Signals That Protect Us from Violence. And he talks about how we instinctually have instincts and fear is really there to tell us something. But he also talks about what is the enemy of that instinct, that intuition.
All of the work was done by intuition in an instant. And that resource, what I really hope you're left with today is that that resource is absolutely brilliant, and it's our nuclear defense system if we listen to it. And it has a competitor in our mind. There's intuition standing here to guard and protect, and there's denial standing over here. Denial is the one that says, this isn't really happening to me. Oh, he's not really dangerous. I don't really have to worry about this problem. And the denial, you know, there's a nice expression that says denial is not just a river in Africa. Right? Denial is a human resource that's enormously valuable to us for some things and enormously destructive to us for others. Example, you need denial to be willing to, sit on top of a rocket ship that's lit and is flying into outer space. You need to be willing to compartmentalize and somewhat deny the risks. You need denial to build a bridge across an enormous river, particularly if you were the first person to ever do that. There are places where it's a valuable resource in our lives, but I would say for 90% of our lives, it's a tremendously destructive resource. It's the thing that allows us to not see something we're looking right at. If intuition is getting from A to Z without stopping along the way, or intuition is knowing without knowing why, then denial is seeing the thing clearly and choosing not to see it.
So there it is. Seeing the thing clearly, but choosing not to see it. That is what we're faced with now. That's the reality we're in now. That's the politicizing of the masks and whatnot, and all the ways in which the lie of America, the lie of what America is supposed to be.
I'll go so far as to say that goes right back to the song you opened the show with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the man singing about how she be jiving.
Jiving too long.
Jiving too long. So we're not just talking about he in the context of the song. If we take that out of the song, and this is the story, this is the thing that happened to him. There was more than one lie there. There was more than one, you know, red flag on the play. And he chose not to see them. So at some point, absolutely, he is complicit. I'm not saying anybody deserves to get their heart broken or to be lied to, but we have a responsibility to see those flags. You know, yes, there's a little bit of benefit of the doubt, but man, when there is a parade and all the flags are red, danger, danger, danger.
I can't disagree. Before we get to the next phase of lying and the effects of it on all of us, there's an article that broke down what they call the 9 motives for telling lies. Mm. Are you ready? They're 9.
Let me get my pen.
Okay. First, protect someone else from punishment. Okay. Now, that's a legitimate lie. Like, you know, for instance, if Byron or Keith's sons had committed some heinous act, they might lie and say they did it to protect them and take the fall. Am I right, Byron and Keith?
Yep.
Well...
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, well, he needs to learn his lesson. Okay.
Well, no, all because right, so. See, I mean, you if your parents brought you up in a particular way, they will always tell you, you do the crime, you pay the time.
Damn.
And so, damn. I mean, if you're instilled with that, you keep, because for instance, I can.
Yeah. So, all right, hold on a second. If you're my dad, you're like, keep your eye on the sparrow. And I'll see you when you...
No.
You did the time.
Hold on.
You got to do the crime.
Well, here's a primary example. Facebook friends want me to play Thug Life. You know what? And I'm like,
What kind of Facebook friends you got playing Thug Life?
I respond back to them, thank you so very much for the invitation, but I have no need to be indulging my time being a thug. I keep from being in that mindset. Please don't send me invites to this kind of game. It's a waste of my time.
So, Byron, how does this relate to protecting someone from punishment?
Because you choose to either punish them teaching a lesson or punish them for the purpose of, like, a Pavlov's dog. Let's just ring a bell. Or my sons, for instance, when they were young, they messed up in church one Sunday. The mother and I were sitting up the church and said, please stop playing. And the mother turns to me and says, you need to take your sons out of here because I'm about to go ballistic.
Mm. So she's like, I got my wooden spoon in my pocketbook.
But the choice of do something to teach a lesson. And I said, on the way home, on leaving the church, we had time to go home, go to the store, go home, come back, pick up the mother. But on the way from the church, I said, you have embarrassed me in the house of God. You have embarrassed your mother.
Oof.
And this is a punishment.
Yeah. They still carry that guilt.
This is a punishment worthy of a whipping. And we're going to go home. And we're going
to get a whipping.
We went to the store first to buy a newspaper, and they said, Daddy, still going home? I said, yes, and you're still going to get a spanking. And I took them home, gave them a whipping, and when we came back to the church, and I said, don't you ever forget this. We do not embarrass ourselves in anywhere in God's house, and your mother deserves an apology. So the lesson was all taught once, but it was a tough lesson, tough love.
Okay, all right. Can I ask you a question?
Okay. Yes.
Does this mean you wouldn't lie to protect your child?
No, I would try to.
Would you take the fall? Would you take the fall for your son? Would you lie?
No, if it's a heinous act, no, because there must be a bigger lesson to be taught. But there's a point in which once they're out of the nest and they're flying themselves, you got to let them fly.
All right,
you can take the fall, you cripple them for the rest of their lives.
Now, Keith, you're a different kind of dad. You would take the fall.
I don't know if you say take the fall. One of the things that I decided with the mother of my kids is that we weren't going to because I got a lot of spankings when I was a kid. I mean, not that it was abusive, but you know, it was like, you know, we got spankings, and I didn't want to do that to mine. So somehow I was able to create this thing. I can't even tell how we did it, but if we disappointed them, they'd get upset and they wouldn't stop and they would never do it again. So a couple of times, you know, they would do something I didn't like, and I would just say, you know, look at, you know, one of them, and I'd just say, hey, you've really disappointed me, and I'm very upset right now with you, and I don't know what, and I really don't want to talk to you right now. They would burst into tears and be so upset that I think that if it was worse than if I'd actually touched them or something. Because I remember my mother used to spank the heck out of me, and I would just turn around and do the same thing the next day. It didn't stop me from doing anything.
Well, that's because you were a bad seed. You were one of them bad seeds.
Right, I was.
And
I
you were a bad seed. That's right. You needed Byron to put the fear of God in you. He'd have been like, you embarrassed me in the house of God.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a different way of parenting.
And Byron is just telling the story differently.
And I was brought up that way.
Pick out the belt.
Yeah, I mean, that was the way I was brought up, and I think I'm okay. But, you know, it's different ways. But I guess the point is just my way of threatening was just saying that I was angry. And even now, you know, they get upset if I say I don't like something they're doing. Because, you know, they just, you know, have a mindset. I don't even know how it got there. I wish I could say, because probably
I understand. But okay, well, that's only one. All right, so we got eight more to get through here. Byron, you got to be more succinct. The second motive for telling lies is to maintain privacy. Now, what are your thoughts on that, Leanne? Do you think that's a legitimate reason to lie? I mean, you don't want to tell
that's
this idiot where
business.
You live.
That's none of your business.
See, there you go. Hold on to the principle. That's a good answer. See?
Yeah, it's very, very, very quick on her feet. Maintain privacy. All right, that we all can understand that one. Obtain a reward. Now, this comes back to the question of benefit. One of the motives for lying. It's a big motive.
Rachel Dozell. You know, I was thinking of partially.
Yeah.
Can I get into that? I just feel in general that sometimes, you know, in the spur of a moment, that's what you do. You know, I've had times where I was going to go to a coffee shop, and, you know, they're going and just really going slow, and I got to get to work, you know, and they're like, I said, listen, I got my car outside right now. The motor's running. Could you just give me my coffee so I can just get out of here? I've done
really
that.
You use the car is running lie. Oh my God. You're Byron.
I don't know.
You need
about
to
that
you need
there.
To go. You need to go. You need
straight
to give
lie.
Him a. He needs a spanking.
I'm being honest in my talking about being a liar.
You're a Starbucks liar. You're what they call.
In the morning.
Yes, the Starbucks liar, starring Keith Brown. His car is always running. Leanne, any thoughts about that? Any thoughts about that?
Beware of this man. Oh
yes.
My gosh.
This goes back to the previous example. I believe I mentioned. You know why someone would inflate their resume. The reward is a job. You know, or why someone would say they make more money than they do, you know, that gains them the reward of esteem.
Okay.
So, and by the way, it's a gamble, too, because you can get busted and make it worse for yourself. So
that's right. Somebody could be standing outside and punch you in the head.
No, I'm talking about in Leanne's example, where if they do check it out and they say, no, you did not work there.
Well, you can't say that you were the president of the University of Arizona. What you can say is that you managed a team when you were really just a member of the team. Like, so you can fudge those. So, I mean, there's a range of lying, of course. You know, some would say, oh, I'm just enhancing my resume. You know, you learn how to spin it, so to speak, to the point where people almost assume everything on your resume is somewhat of a fabrication, somewhat, you know, because they can prove the actual stuff. Like, did you get a degree from this place? Are you certified in this to do this? You know, those kind of verifiable things, most people wouldn't lie on most. But in terms of your contribution to the team, you can play with that all day long. Because again, the reward is a job or a raise. And those things are those are tangible things that mean a life bump for you.
Life bumps.
And you know what else? Can I just piggyback on that? So I've been in interviews, and one of the ask me these, I feel like, weird questions, which are supposed to, and it's like impossible to answer truthfully. Like, what do you think is your worst attribute? You know, like they'll say, like, what do you think is your best? what is your best? And everybody will always say, oh, blah, 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 I can do this, and I'm a genius and all this. But what is your worst? Everybody always says, because I work too hard and I care too much. What do you say?
Answering dumb questions at interviews. Next.
Oh, stop. Stop. You know, can I say what that reminds me of? This reminds me of back in the day, I did a casting for a short film. And, you know, we put this casting. It was a short film. I don't remember what it's called. And we got a ton of resumes. We got a couple hundred resumes and headshots for free, no pay, anything. But people wanted work. And this one woman, on the back of the resume, you could put special skills. And she put extraordinary control of the gluteus maximus as her special skill. Now, this is long before twerking. So... this is the 90s. So, all right, let me go on to the fourth. Get out of awkward situation. Now, let me ask you, Leanne, this, I have to assume this type of lie happens in dating. They even have apps. So, any thoughts on getting out of an awkward situation? Do you feel that's legitimate? And then I want to hear from you, Byron.
Yes, I've lied all the time on that. Miss, do you have a boyfriend? Yes. Yes, I do. Are you married? Yes, sir, I am.
Yes, I'm married. His name is Killer.
Yes, absolutely.
Like
absolutely.
Geraldine.
Skull Crusher Jones.
I'm just saying. Yeah, that one. Is that even a lie? That feels like safety right there. Because men are crazy. Yeah,
this is true. Mr. Saunders.
Yes, sir.
any thoughts on that, getting out of an awkward situation? Yes.
And a lie would be appropriate. If indeed you think you are going to create a situation where your response absolves you from any wash your hands, wrongdoing, walk away, and it'll never be repeated again or even come back to bite you in the butt later on. Tell the lie, damn it. Get on with your life.
Is that your way of saying, if you can get away with it, do it. That's Byron Saunders.
At some point, because you're going to reference when...
The wisdom of Byron Saunders.
When will it be manageable for you to make that effort? I would say there are life and death situations, but you probably save your life by telling the lie. Because if you tell the truth, they're going to shoot you anyway. So you have to come to a realization, a rationale. What's better, to be dead or stay alive?
Well, is that part of your course, Byron? Tell a lie and stay alive. Well, Byron Saunders.
Available now for $49.95.
Available now for $49.99. And that's not all.
Excuse me, if you act now, I'll send it to you more than once. Twice.
Exactly. And then at the very end of the commercial, he looks at the camera and goes, all right, that's a lie.
That's a lie. That's very good. That's good. You know, our situation now is because we have accepted lying as regular. It's just everybody lies. You know, we could go back to 40 years of lies that have impacted on where we are right now, socially, politically. Every way, which way you want to go, because the lie that started it did not finish with a realization that you alter the truth. You can't. You're going to come back to the place where the truth still has pureness in it. And because you try
pureness,
to alter,
though, pureness isn't always,
the truth
always win. I'm just going to say, pureness does not always win, just so you know.
Well, truth always wins.
I don't know about that. Which country are we speaking about?
Always wins.
No. Okay, then how did Trump get elected? How did Trump get elected? How did Trump get elected?
But he cheated and he got caught. He got caught doing it. So
we're not winning right now. We are not winning right now.
We are winning back our opportunity to recapture and take it.
I'll go with that.
You gotta take it.
I'll go with that. All right, well, you are tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio. And as Byron said, we're going to take it back because we've got a little ways more to go in the show. And then I just want to say that if you're enjoying this show, if you're enjoying Night Shift, if you're enjoying public radio, if you're enjoying us being able to talk about the topics we do, then please make a pledge. Byron, do you actually know the phone number? Because none of my other co-hosts know the phone number.
Oh, my.
I know you don't know. 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Make a pledge right now in the name of Night Shift.
That's right.
Whatever you can do. What we really need is every show, as I told you, we need 3 WBAI buddies. So you can do it. Even if you pledge for another show, all we need is $15 a month. It's got to be worth it. $15, 4 shows a month. You know, divide that by 15. Tell me it's not worth it. Come on. You know you need your Night Shift. And Night Shift needs you. So make a pledge. You can call right now, 516-620-3602. Night Shift. And we've been talking about lying. And we've been talking about why we lie. We're talking about the reasons that people lie. We still have, what do we have, 4 more to get through here. But we've talked about protect someone from punishment, maintain privacy, obtain a reward, or get out of an awkward situation. And here's the 5th one. And this is a big one. And I feel like everything that we have here, I feel like our president has done. Okay, win admiration from others. I think that's a big one. And what are your thoughts on that? Because we were talking about, and I'm asking you, Leanne, we were talking about digital life and how people put out personas, you know, that aren't them, though it is different from what we do as performers or public personas. But win admiration for others. You know, I've talked about on the show here how social media and cell phones have uncovered this need we all have for constant validation. What are your thoughts on that lie? Because are we lying when we put up these avatars and Facetune ourselves? And, you know, people used to just put up their high school photo practically as their profile pic, but now they can Facetune. What are your thoughts?
I've never Facetuned, but I have taken a picture over a dozen times to make sure it was the right angle, my best side. So, you know, is there really a difference there? I don't think I have any high ground. But yeah, winning admiration from others. I'm going to say it's legitimate. Legitimate is the wrong word, but what I really mean is I can see people doing that because admiration feels good. It, like you said, it feels like validation. It's like, yay, look, and it's not just look at me, but look at me, I'm doing something right. I'm doing something well. You know, it's like, mommy, look what I did. And if we don't ever outgrow that, you know, I'm trying to remember where I read this, but one of the best places to get to in life is when you really don't care what other people think. And truly, truly don't care. You know, because whether they do or not has absolutely nothing to do with you. If they like you, that's something to do with them. If they don't like you, it's something to do with them. You know, so it's a very freeing place to get to. But the way our society is set up now, it's very difficult to get there. And if you can't win admiration on your merits, I can see people lying to get it, for sure.
That's very similar to if you can't get the job based on your real experience, lie.
Yes. Tell me lies. Tell me sweet little lies.
Mr. Saunders, what are your thoughts on winning admiration from others as a good justification for lying? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, once again, you push a false narrative to the edge. Mm-hmm. And the at some point, who's going to be the victim as a result of that false narrative? And then I guess if you're just in it for your own pat on the back.
Well, now you sound like you're talking about dating, Byron.
Well, no, it's a self-indulged moment. You're gonna. If you want to be a narcissist, follow the playbook that's being given right now, the daily playbook in the briefings, because that's how you get to see a liar lying to themselves into thinking they're the truth. Okay, so you want that pat on the back, you gotta earn it.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Does admiration for something you haven't done feel as sweet?
Well, you know, here's what I think. Byron, you can answer. I can answer too. Go ahead, Byron.
If what you are looking for is the admiration, and you get it, then did you satisfy what you were doing? Okay, because at the end of the day, if it's just for you, I mean, I at some point as an actor, I go out on the stage. I love the applause. I want the applause, even if I'm the least main character on the set. I take it because that energy is for me, because I gave what to anticipate that. So I get the adoration part. That's self-serving. It's wonderful. It makes me feel good. But am I the only one on this earth? Because if I have a responsibility to make others or share my feeling good with others, then I've got to learn how to cross that bridge. And it's not just me, me, me. I got to walk with that person or the people or the crowd that I'm with so that the adoration is then legitimate.
That's all very nice and high and mighty, but you know, you're talking about walking with, and if you're going to use the example of like the president, and he's just one example. He's just the most recent, most, as my dad likes to say, pungent example. But any kind of admiration or adulation or you know, any kind of applause or validation that you get, as we know, we live in an age where everybody is not just seeking validation. Everybody feels they have to, in some way, compete for attention. Everybody feels that they need to be seen as the best they can envision of themselves. So if you're someone who is, to Leanne's question, she asked, well, is it just as sweet? Well, what are you comparing it to? If you've achieved nothing, you know, or in the case of Rachel Dolezal, you're just your average white girl. But if you feel passionate about this thing, and you feel the only way you passionate about this thing can do what you want to achieve in this area, this thing you feel passionate about. I mean, like I said, I have my own theories after seeing the documentary as to why she wanted to, quote unquote, be black. But compare the adoration for things you didn't achieve to no adoration at all. There's no comparison.
Yeah, but I think that's almost a false binary, you know. Well, and I don't even think Rachel did it for adoration or for
no, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Do I tell people I graduated from Harvard and I didn't? Or do I say I graduated from Baruch? I went to CUNY. So I would rather.
But you don't need that validation.
But
you are somebody who you have actual accolades.
It is impossible. It is mathematically impossible for you to have succeeded at nothing. If you woke up this morning, you succeeded. You know, where are you setting the bar?
That's a good point. Where are you setting the bar? If you're in a room full of...
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
All right, I'm sorry, that's Jack Nicholson. If you're in a room full of millionaires, billionaires, if you've made $10 million, it doesn't mean anything. So you lie and you say you made $100 million. You lie and say that you've made billions when you haven't. Why? Because of that bar, where you are, the room you're in. You know, if I'm standing on the stage...
Understood. If we're, you know, who can get on stage and tell the best jokes, the billionaires don't touch me. So where are we measuring? It's okay to be good with what you're good at. Why do that to myself?
You can say that from a place, okay, pardon the usage here, a privilege. You have the privilege of having accolades, great or not so great, or definitely decent or better than most, that you can choose from. But if you're someone, like when you read about these people who completely create, I don't mean like the neuroscientists, but people who completely, they've been scamming, they're total scammers, they have nothing, they pretend to be complete people. We've all dealt with them. I worked for a scam artist, you know, and he ended up owing me $25,000. You know, it turned out to be like a James Bond villain. But at any rate, point is that
don't date that. You know,
no, I definitely won't. But I'm just saying that what you compare it to, if you are insecure at the very least, you know, Byron has all kinds of accolades. I could meet Byron if I had no accolades and I was intimidated by the fact that he's done all these things and known all these people. Maybe I feel I need to lie and say I've done things that I haven't done. We've all known people like that. I've known people who, like, I just don't get why they lie all the time. We've all, at some point, met in our life somebody who was just a completely obsessive, I'm not going to name names, but I've known people, and I'm not talking about you, Byron, or Keith. I'm saying that I've definitely known people who, they just lie. They're always exaggerating, always. And they lie so much you don't even know.
Do you think that's a byproduct of having a society that's built on the insecurities of its people in order to sell product?
I think it's a factor.
Okay.
What, gentlemen, you can weigh in on this part here.
I mean, the society works because there's something wrong with you. You haven't worked hard enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not good enough. You're not tall enough. All product is being sold to you based on a perceived weakness that they make you think you have.
I agree 100%. That cosmetics industry is all built on the perceived insecurities.
Thanks for saying that. I got to order some lipstick from Sephora.
Would you get me the Lena Horne number 9 look? I think so.
I think so. All right, well, let me move on. Yeah.
I'm tempting myself. Yes, move on. Listen,
I'm going to move on.
These are good.
And I'll let the gentleman talk on this. This one makes sense, and this is probably more for the woman. Protect oneself from physical harm. You know, to me, and that's an obvious lie. You know, Keith has done it. He just yells out, "I know judo," when they're about to beat him up. Exercise power over others. Now that's a very specific kind of lie. Like, and again, as artists, we've all met, you know, it's specific for women in general when they're young, especially. But we've all met those people who act like they can do something for you when they really can't. Have we not?
Mm-hmm. He's the director, he's the producer, he's the casting director. Oh, yeah.
And Keith, you and Byron have had experiences in your own respective fields like that?
Sure.
Any that particularly come to mind? Byron, I know you have a wealth of them. Yeah,
go ahead, Byron. The defense mechanism of every human being is self-protection. It's first law of nature. You're going to protect yourself, you know, and it's, I get that. And if it extracts you from the harm that's about to, the impending harm, what you're going to do? You're going to stand there and just be harmed? No. And if the lie gets you out of that particular moment, then so be it. But once again, at what point do you either defend, stand your ground with the truth, or depend upon lying as your only source of escape?
Well, wow. truth sometimes is not going to get you out of physical harm.
Well, that's why I'm asking a question, more or less.
Well, yeah,
not
that's
trying
that's,
to answer.
Well, that's the rich rationale, so you can understand that motive. Mr. Brown, anything you want to say about avoiding embarrassment or anything?
I just agree that it's often just a reflex action. We did a campaign at work once about saying sorry. It was actually a female empowerment thing. It was put out by like Pantene shampoo or something. And this idea that women specifically would say they're sorry all the time, you know, like if you know, and they showed all these very small vignettes where, you know, like somebody opens the door and they actually are being rude to you, but they swung in your face and then you just say sorry. And then you drop something or they drop something and then you say, sorry, you know, and it's just a thing that we do, you know, it's kind of a lie because you're just trying to make the situation not get awkward and stay nice. But a lot of times it's not even really your fault. And you just sort of just say sorry all the time because you just want to keep going and not have anybody say anything rude. Like somebody pushes you when they get on the subway and you say, sorry, it was completely their fault. You know, it's a way of just trying to immediately, you know, vanquish the situation so it's not going to be, get to a worse place, you know. And I think that often people do it without even thinking. I probably do it myself, you know, where somebody does something and I just immediately say, that's not what I meant to say, or sorry about that, or something, you know, just so that you don't have it go further.
Well, there it is. Well, you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Night Shift. Leanne, how can people find you if they want to hear more of you, see more of you?
My website is veryfunnylady.com. And so you can also find me at Leanne Lord on Twitter and Instagram. On YouTube, I'm Leanne Lord Comedy. But truly, the portal to all things me is veryfunnylady.com.
Mr. Brown, where can we see this fantastic art?
Probably the easiest place right now is just go to Instagram. My handle is I am the leopard. Just one word, that's it. You got me.
Mr. Saunders, where can we find you on the dark web?
Well, let me start off by apologizing. I'm sorry. You know. See, I'm not about to tell a lie. It's the truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God. Okay, you can find me every Wednesday and sometimes Tuesdays and sometimes Thursdays, but mostly Wednesdays from 8 to 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio with Kay's son and friends. Kay's son is Citizen Eric Citizen Payne, Wayne Gilman, and Byron Saunders, as we discuss headline topic news nationally and internationally from 8 to 9 p.m. Check us out. Otherwise, peace and love, always. And become a WBAI buddy. Come on, y'all. What's up? Three? Come on, Mike. We can at least do five. Come on.
Yeah, I'd like it five. I know. Yeah,
three. Byron Saunders. It's like,
can't be Byron Saunders. It's patented. It's, in brief, I will say this, and this is the brief part. Lying is among the most sophisticated, and this is from Scientific American, one of the most sophisticated and demanding accomplishments of the human brain. Children have to learn how to lie. People with certain types of frontal lobe injuries may not be able to do it. Okay, because all y'all are in here, you all know how to lie, but there are people who can't lie. Electrical stimulation of the prefrontal cortex appears to improve our ability to deceive. This region of the brain may, among other things, be responsible for the decision to lie or tell the truth. Most people, and this is really important in this time, most people have trouble recognizing false statements. Some polygraph tests are better than others, but they're far from perfect. Researchers are trying to use imaging methods to distinguish truth from lies. Intensified activity in the prefrontal cortex may be an indicator of the process which we decide to lie or not, but it tells us nothing about the lie itself. And what's interesting about that, like, what if they could put like a heat sensing camera on the president as he's talking? Like, what do you think we would see happening in the prefrontal cortex? What do you guys see? What do you think would be happening there?
We break the thing. Just
too many lies.
Exactly.
Like in like in Scanners.
I was actually thinking of everybody see Knives Out?
Yes,
I did. Yes.
Yeah,
I
remember that the whole thing that was built on the conceit that this one girl could not lie. And whenever she would immediately
right.
And I thought it was a brilliant premise, even though I don't even know if there is existing condition. It doesn't even matter because you just need to believe in the course of the film, and it works so beautifully. And I always wondered after I saw the film, I went to Google it at some point. Is there such a thing where
so Keith's like, thank God I don't have that. Okay, no.
Exactly. I've been barfing all day.
Exactly. But,
yeah.
Go on, all right, sir. So yes, no, there is a good movie, and I did like that conceit. Well, I do want to say thank you, all of you. It's been real, and you are tuned to Night Shift. We're on from Mondays from 10 p.m. till midnight. You can visit us on the web at lifeislikesciencefiction.com. You can visit us on Facebook, NITESHIFT, Night Shift. You can also follow us on Twitter, NITESHIFTZ. And any parting thoughts, Ms. Lord?
Yes, I mean, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I think it's timely to have it. And I did want to say something about lying to avoid embarrassment in because the author that you mentioned who wrote The Gift of Fear talks about that. And there was a study yes. done, and men's biggest fear is being made fun of or being embarrassed. Women's biggest fear is being physically assaulted or killed. That it had those the stakes for men in terms of embarrassment are that high. So yeah, that's wanting to avoid embarrassment is a thing.
That's right. Well, Keith, that's why Keith yells out, "I know judo" all the time whenever he feels threatened.
Exactly.
I'm going to try that.
See if it works. Any parting thoughts, Mr. Saunders? I mean, I know we need to clothe the naked and everything, but...
Well... yeah, please clothe some of them. They need some clothes. My parting thoughts are these. Love is the most powerful force in the universe. Stop relying on tricks. You want the truth? Try love. It is the purest truth. It's the closest thing to God. And we need to stop fooling ourselves with these virtual games that people play. Very dangerous. Come back to reality.
Virtual games people play. Sounds like a remake of that song. All right. I'm Mike Sargent. I've been here with Leanne Lord, Keith Brown, and of course, the inimitable Byron Saunders. Until next time, this has been Night Shift.
Census is a count of everyone in the United States, no matter your immigration status. The census count is how our communities get billions of dollars for programs that we all rely on. You'll be able to do this online or even over the phone. Now let's go through some of the questions.
This looks easy. So the census asks, how many people live in your home? Do you rent or own? Everyone's name, how you're related, age, ethnicity, and home phone number. So me and my wife, we have two kids. I'm 40.
You get the idea. Your information is completely confidential. By law, it cannot be shared with anyone. The census only comes once every 10 years, and 2020 is our chance to get it right.
Hi, this is Tony Roberts, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth since